Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my guest is Chasity Munoz. Chasity is a truth-seeking advocate committed to exposing the hidden dangers of Suboxone and challenging the mainstream narrative around opioid recovery. Drawing from personal experience and extensive independent research, she speaks out against the long-term harm, dependency, and withdrawal effects too often downplayed by the medical and pharmaceutical industries. With a focus on informed consent, transparency, and real healing, Chasity works to educate others, elevate silenced voices, and push for alternative holistic paths to recovery. Refusing to accept profit-driven solutions as the only option, she stands for truth, freedom from chemical dependence, and accountability in addiction treatment. So without any further ado, Chasity Munoz, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure is all mine, Chasity. Your information is so important. All of us have known people at one time or another who've had to go through the throes of opioid addiction. Indeed, I've had Janice Barcelo on my show, and she's talked about how when you look at it, even when children come into this world, how the expectant mothers are often, if they don't push the baby out by a certain amount of time, the OBGYN is pushing these synthetic drugs to not only induce these powerful contractions, but also like an influx of opioids into the mother and the baby. So the baby is literally born high on opioids. It's like a crazy world we live in. So I thought that it would be great for you to share your story, the challenges you had to overcome, and what you've done to, get on the right track, and now you're on the path to helping yourself and healing others. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and how the process began in your childhood and all that?
That's so interesting that you just mentioned that, because that literally just ha gave me a memory that I completely forgot about. That when my son was born, I was completely clean. I feel like I needed to speak about this because I completely forgot about this. When my son was born, I wasn't dilating at all, and so they broke my water, and they were giving me all these medications. And after I finally, they had it, they did an emergency C-section, and then after I had him, CPS actually came into the room saying that there was stuff in my system, and I didn't do anything. There were certain things and drugs in my system trying to threaten to take my child away. And so that's so interesting. And at the time, I mean, I was 20 years old. I was so vulnerable. I was so young. I mean, they didn't take them, right? But it was like, now that you're saying that, I'm like, wow. I mean, they were just, once again, big pharma preying on young and vulnerable, right? So anyways, I just feel like I needed to kind of speak that. That's very interesting. So
Fine,
yeah,
because
my
we know that medical kidnappings are prevalent in many places.
oh yeah. Yeah, interesting. I think I need to dive a little bit into that. But anyways, on my own. But hi, yeah. So my name is Chasity, and I was in active addiction for a very long time. It all started just things that went on at home. I wasn't being protected like a young woman should be. And I just kind of started associating myself with the wrong people, doing crazy things, just putting myself in dangerous situations. But the real addiction didn't start until I was in a doctor's office, like until I was prescribed my first bottle of Vicodin. And that was like, I felt like I finally found something where I could function and also numb the pain and the trauma and not deal with it, right? So that's actually where it all began. And so I caught myself, just using more and more, pain pills and medication. And that's when I was introduced to this medication called Suboxone. Suboxone is an opioid dependent. So it's like for people who are on, pain medication, or people who are, struggling from heroin addiction, or in, now they're using it for any other addiction, but it was initially created for opioid use disorder, which I don't even want to get started with that, because personally, if a doctor is prescribing you an addictive medication, you're going to become addicted. There's no disorder, but it's just their way of being like, oh, well, here, let me create this now for this disorder we created, and all this rat race of bullshit, right? So I had this massive spirit. So I was on Suboxone for over 10 years, and I had this complete shift and massive spiritual awakening after I went through chemotherapy in 2018. It seems like a lot of people who have their spiritual awakenings all kind of came around the same time, around 2019, 2020. But you know, the chemotherapy and the cancer was the catalyst to my awakening, and I felt very, very compelled to start cleaning up my temple, taking out my breast implants, doing all, just cleaning everything up. And I was on Ambien, Adderall, Xanax, and Suboxone. I was on all prescribed, by the way. I was on all these prescription medications, and I completely cut them all cold turkey out of my life. I found myself kind of bound to my bed for about a month or two, not wanting to give in, and I eliminated all the medication out of my everyday, you know, what I was doing every day, but I had to go back to Suboxone. Like I couldn't, I physically couldn't, I would, it's a trap. Like it was, I couldn't do my everyday stuff. I felt so awful. So I was still using the Suboxone, not because I wanted to, not because I needed to, you know, mask my feelings because I was in the process of healing, but because I was stuck and because I was trapped. And I found this clinic that I was going to every single day, and I was getting my daily dose. And it was almost like there were so many other people doing this. I almost felt like another, I didn't even have, they didn't even call me by my name. I was a number to them, right? So it was like I was just another cattle. Like I just felt like cattle, you know? And my intuition was like, you can't do this anymore. This is not a part of you anymore. You can't do this. And I'm thinking, I've already tried to come off. It's so difficult. So I decided I was going to just put myself out there and document this process that I was about to start. And so what I did was, you know, James, I started meditating every single day, and I started, and my intuition kind of started guiding me how to get off of this medication. And I just started doing things. My intuition is so, so strong. I mean, I am so grateful for my intuition because it's guided me through. My only problem is I really need to, you know, I have the tendency sometimes to ignore it whenever I'm tied to things emotionally. You know, it's like I swat it away and it's like, listen up, girl. So it started guiding me on how to get off of this stuff. And it took me over a year to come off of this. And I started documenting my process from when I put it all in hot water. And I took a picture of it, and because that was like, here we go, it's about to get great, let's go. You know, instead of being scared, I tell people to just, excuse my French, but make it their bitch, because it was the hardest fight of my life. People who have, I interviewed one guy that he was prescribed this medication from the VA, and when they didn't give him his prescription again because he took it upon himself to start tapering himself down. And his doctor was like, well, since you've gone against our orders, he's like, I'm not giving you any more. And he literally had a gun to his head because that's how horrendous this coming off of this drug can be. I mean, there are millions of people stuck on this drug. So I started documenting my journey. I started put like, even when I wasn't sleeping, when I was withdrawing, I was making videos and just posting them. And what I noticed was every post that I was doing about Suboxone was going viral. And so many people were commenting, I am stuck. I need help. I can't do this. How did you do this? I am scared. I want to start this process. It's soul. So I'm just like, wow. It became very clear to me that, okay, this is a thing. This is an epidemic. Some people don't, they don't have anybody to talk to. They're ashamed. They're embarrassed that they're on this medication. Some people are like, you're the only person I can talk to about this. So I felt like, okay, this is my mission, right? Like I want to help as many people as I possibly can liberate themselves from this ball and chain, right? I want to expose this shit and what's going on here, and pave the way for others not to be embarrassed, and pave the way for others to break free from the ball and chain. And so, you know, it took me a little time to get to where, and I'm still trying to get organized today. But that's kind of where I'm at right now, you know?
Just through that process, because it almost sounds to me, not knowing any better, that this is almost a form of, like, remember the old days, I don't know if they still do this, but they would like give methadone to heroin addicts, in the theory being to wean them off the harder stuff, but it's just another addiction of essentially the same narcotic. What was it like? Well, first tell us the times when you were unable to get it for whatever reason, you ran out of repeats, refills. You weren't able to get a hold of your doctor. What did it feel like in your body, physically, emotionally, and indeed spiritually? Like, was there brain fog in the morning? Did you have any kind of muscle aches? One of the things, it sounds kind of corny, but it's kind of my issue. I mean, I've had pretty powerful painkillers before because I busted ribs from coughing fits, because of asthma. And I was prescribed something, I think it was called Endon or something, but it was a strong, that's what they call it in Australia. It's a strong painkiller, an opioid. But when I realized that, wait a minute, this is going to give me severe constipation, it's like I'd rather fight through the pain than be blocked up because I hate the feeling of being blocked up. Take us through that process, because what I found out when people have told me about the withdrawal process, and I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself, but it relates to the constipation issue. When they get off the drug and then they go through withdrawals, if I didn't know any better, the way it's described to me, all that blockage that's been in their intestines for so long due to the constipation and their inability to eat because of the constipation, it all just comes out like explosive diarrhea. It was like, holy cow. And then the muscle cramps, because it's one of the side effects of the asthma medicine, is at times these painful cramps. I keep two bottles of magnesium spray by my bed in case I get a cramp in the middle of the night, and I just spray myself and I try not to scream too loud. So take us through that process of what it's like to run off, run out of it, want to get back on, the mental process, and then getting back on an even keel, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, not a problem at all. And that is one of the side effects of Suboxone. There were times that I would go like a week without going to the restroom at all. I mean, yes, it is. It does so much. I've lost 3 teeth. I mean, there are people that don't have any teeth at all because of the dental decay that it causes. I spoke to a lady who is actually, I speak to a lady regularly that is in the hospital right now fighting for her life from cancer due to Suboxone use from her doctor. What does it feel like? Fortunately, well, I never really didn't have it, right? I've always had my doctor always made sure I had enough, and I always had it, but I will talk about, the whenever I try to liberate myself and I try to completely quit it cold turkey and the 2 months of what that was like. So for starters, I will, and what I speak every single other person that's dealing with this right now, one of the biggest things that is hard, like it's restless legs, right? So you have really bad restless legs at night. I would wake up sometimes, like I would be laying there just trying to call, you get real bad anxiety. I would try to calm myself and it would feel like something was on my chest. I mean, a lot of times I would have to stand up and just walk around and take a deep breath. I spent a lot of time in meditation going through this process, just trying to calm myself and calm my mind, which was, really challenging to do because you're feeling all of the things. It could be so hot, but you are cold down to your, I don't know how to explain it except for like bone chilling cold. I mean, it is so cold. You want to put like 3 different jackets around you. I mean, when I would go to the grocery store, I'd be like layered up, like three layers, because I would just be so stinking cold. You get the hot and cold sweats. You're sweating, so like it's almost like flu-like. So you're sweating, and then the next minute you're freezing, and then you're sweating. It's like your body temperature is just up and down and up and down. It's freaking horrendous. It was definitely one of the hardest things I've ever had to fight in my life, and I've been through quite a bit of shit. I have come across, I mean, these are all vitamin and nutrient deficient. This is your body telling you, you have restless legs. Well, you're deficient, of magnesium, just like you said. Oh, you're experiencing this. And with some time and education, I've learned a little bit as to how to make this process a lot easier. Therefore, I can help other people. But those are the symptoms that I experienced. I would say the worst one of all is probably the restless legs, because the restless legs and the anxiety, because it makes it absolutely impossible to get some rest at night. And that's what you need. You got to have the sleep. You got to have the rest, because that's when we're healing.
About the mental processes, clarity of thought, what was it like thinking and having to process things and having to function on a day-to-day basis?
You mean like with a clear, it was challenging. It was very challenging because at the time when I was going through this, I was caring for my mom, but luckily I was able to kind of do this from home. So it's like I didn't have to go to work or check in with the boss or check, I was very fortunate to be able to do this from home. But what I will say, during that fight, I was so focused on just keeping my eye on the prize, which was being liberated from this shit once and for all. I mean, this shit had consumed my life for so long. And anytime, like I went to rehab a couple of times and that's where they originally, put me on it, and when I would come off of it, I would never be successful because my body would still not feel good. And so I would keep my eyes on the prize and I really didn't mingle or do anything out in the world. I just focused on what I was trying to do come off of it. But what I will say is being off of that medication and being off of everything, I'm learning to, I'm very emotional. I'm a very emotional being. And I understand this and I'm learning to navigate it, because that medication also suppresses it. I mean, it suppresses so much and you can even see it in a person's eyes. Like I have a before and after picture. And I mean, you can see the life force energy coming back in my eyes, like being off of that medication. But I will say emotionally, it was kind of wild at first because I had to, and I'm still working on it, learning to get my emotions in check, learning how to navigate uncomfortable situations or dealing with certain circumstances without something suppressing how I'm feeling about things. I also am realizing I am very, very intuitive and I can feel other people and I have a, and that's not pleasant either sometimes, that's, I mean, I have this understanding of why I've masked and tried to stay, and I've stayed numb as long as I have because I didn't have the coping mechanisms to deal with what I call my own superpowers, right? And the things that I had been through. So this was what I was, this was kind of what I was doing using the Vicodin, but I was ready to take all this on. I was ready to feel, I was ready to experience, I was ready to just be without the suppression of this stuff. So like I said, I'm still in the process of learning how to navigate it, but yeah, it's been fun.
Definitely, it's a process. Now, from what I understand of what you mentioned earlier, when you took it, it helped to take the edge off, so to speak. Kind of, I guess that's part of the trap, is to give you a feeling of staying on an even keel, right? And being functional, right? That's kind of, I guess, part of the appeal of the whole thing. What did it make you feel like body-wise? Because the videos you put out, they're quite inspiring. You're an
Thank you.
athletic gal. You're very athletic. You work out. Were you able to do those things when you were in the throes of the addiction? And because one of the problems that we're all from a shame-based upbringing through one reason or another, through a series of traumas, whatever the case may be. So one of the challenges in our existence here is just learning to coexist with yourself. And to not allow this shame-based upbringing, for that came about through whatever reason, to influence us on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, make poor decisions, for example, poor association, what have you. It's all tied in this matrix system we live in. So, what was it like getting back into the flow of things athletically with your body? You said like you felt like you were coming back alive. Can you tell us about that process?
I'm so glad you asked that question. Yeah, that was difficult because for me, I have to work out. It's where I'm gonna just pour every bit of energy into myself. I have to work out, especially being clean, especially because I catch myself wanting to mask when I'm uncomfortable. So instead of doing that, I'm like, all right, let me go work out, which is why and I'm uncomfortable a lot, which is why I'm probably pretty fit because I like to work out a lot. But I will say, when I was coming off of Cybele, when I finally took that jump and came off of it was challenging because my body was so used to, it's hard to explain because it's like I didn't have like every bit of life force energy is sucked out of you, although you are still able to do things and function. You're just so disconnected though. I don't, you know, when you're taking that medication, you're so disconnected from source, from self, but you're functioning very 3D, if that makes any sense. Meaning I can work out, I can do all the things. So, you know, when I came off of that, I did not allow myself any time to, I mean, I still went to the gym, and what I did was I would take a little bit of of this kratom just to kind of help alleviate, you know, the withdrawal symptoms that I was experiencing while I was at the gym. So I would
What's
take a
kratom?
little
Can
bit.
you tell us for a moment what kratom is?
Right. It's an addictive root. It's very addicting. So I even though I am speaking about it, I'm not an advocate for it because I recently had to get myself off of that again too. So, but when you're coming off of Suboxone, it was like a, it's something you can get here in the States. I don't know about there in Australia, but it's something you can get here in the States, like legally through, like, you know, you can order it online. You have to kind of be careful. You don't want to go to a smoke shop or go to, you know, a gas station to buy it. That's where they sell it. But if you get a good kind, a good clean kind, it can be very helpful. And during this process, I used it when I would like go to the gym. I would do a couple of scoops with my orange juice because it would make me feel at least decent enough to go work out and do something productive. And then, you know, you just have to be very careful, because you can get carried away with it if your mind's not right. You have to just be very cautious and very careful. But that's, it was challenging. But I was so dead set on getting off of this shit once and for all that nothing else mattered. And I knew if I kept working out, you know, I had to build my body back up. My body had to get used to working out without the Suboxone. It had to get used to just doing all of the things without the help of, without the assistance of that Suboxone. So it was challenging, but it was definitely something that helped me through this process. And luckily at the time, I wasn't really lifting weights quite yet. I was doing more cardio, and you know, I'm a beast when it comes to that, you know? So it was a little bit easier for me just to cycle for 45 minutes, you know what I mean? Versus lifting weights and building muscle. But yeah, that it was challenging, but I'm glad that I, when you are coming off of something like that, or when you are dealing with something like that, the best thing you can do is get yourself busy. Just keep, but don't give yourself time to sit there and think about what you are experiencing. You have to go and you have to be busy.
One of the problems that people have with opioids is, if I understand it correctly, it tends to shut down the dopamine process. So the things that normally, and it probably affects serotonin and other endocrinary glandular issues as well, but it shuts down our normal ability to feel happy, the ability to have a natural high, the ability to be joyous, content, uplifted, right? Because it becomes the substitute, and eventually, as a result of use, it begins to shut down natural processes. Could take us through the process of when you started to feel those natural processes coming back, you know, the natural, like, giddiness of life, where you see something ridiculous, you just laugh out loud, and it's not like a forced or an opioid laughter. It's something that comes from within. You begin to feel yourself. I'm talking about the emotional, spiritual side now of like coming back to life. As you mentioned, the physical side of coming back to life. I'd like to know what your thought processes are, or what your feelings are about the mental and the spiritual aspects of the mind, body, soul connection.
I would love that. Actually, I was going to chime in and wanted to share, you know, when I had this shift in my whole being. I
Oh,
mean,
please, please continue.
this come, yeah. So you actually asked me, right? Because I was like, oh, I'm going to chime in, but you're one step ahead of me. So like I'd mentioned earlier, I'd went through cancer and chemotherapy, and I had this, it was just like the catalyst to my awakening. And I started meditating more. I started just focusing more on myself. I started to kind of clean up my act, but when I realized something had shifted within me, I think this was like, and this is when I came, when I started finding all my people, like you, you know, all of our people in our community. And it just, it was like, it just catapulted, I just catapulted through this awakening. It was so beautiful. But when I knew something had shifted, I remember I was at my house, and there was like a bug crawling on the floor. And I was having all these little synchronicities and experiences that I really didn't know. I wasn't really conscious. You know, I was waking up. It felt like I was just waking up. And I remember seeing a bug on the floor, and I went to go step on it, and something screamed and was like, "No." And I'm like, a little confused, not knowing, because normally my old self would just, you know, I'm certain I experience, I am a walk-in. Like, I know I have assistance of a soul. I have some spiritual assistance that has helped me get through, because before all of this, I had been through so much shit. And it was like, I think my soul was like, "I'm tapped out. I can't make it much longer with the things that you're about to endure. I need a little assistance," is what it felt like. So when I had that voice scream at me, I was so confused about this. Why can I squish this bug? I just had an appreciation for life. I couldn't do it. And I picked up this box, I remember, and I was gonna drop the box on the bug, because then I wouldn't be responsible for it, right? I was just, all these weird thoughts and feelings were just kind of coming through, and it was like so confusing and so weird. And so I remember grabbing this box and being like, "Okay, well, like, if I drop the box on the bug, then it's like more like, you know, bug slaughter or manslaughter, whatever. Like, it's not me, actually." It was just this weird experience, right? So I did it anyway, and then I just start crying, and I'm like, "Yo, what is going on? Something had significantly shifted within my being." That's when I knew like something was different. And you know, I started just diving deep and going within. But as far as, and sometimes it's challenging, because it's almost like I'm not even the person, I'm not even that person. So I forgot and forget about a lot of things. Like, my mind is compartmentalized because there's just been so much shit. And I think it's what my mind has done to kind of protect me and help me, you know? But as far as like being able to, like, coming alive again, I would probably say about 2022 is when I started to come alive again. And what the interesting thing, though, James, is I was still on Suboxone, but I was in the process of like weaning it down, because it's not something you can just, "Oh, I'm taking this whole 8 milligrams and I'm just going to stop." No, it you have to taper down even that 8 milligrams, because it has such a long half-life. You know, but when I began the process of tapering down is when I started to kind of come alive again, is when I started being happy again. And I started to laugh and just feel myself. And that was probably about 2022.
Take us through the dietary aspect of it. Did you like start taking in more water, clean water, hydrate yourself more? Did your dietary needs change, or did you feel the compulsion to change your dietary needs? And what were your dietary habits like before withdrawal addiction, in the addiction process, and after?
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So people ask me that all the time. What do you do with your diet? I'm like, I let my intuition tell me what I need. Like, I don't, it's so interesting. I'm very intuitively guided. Like, well, I will say, when I started this, no more fast food. You know, I stopped with the fast food. I like eliminated sodas. I was not really a big soda drinker anyway, but I mean, I would have like a Dr. Pepper. Ugh, I can't even say Dr. Pepper. I'm like, bleh. But you know, I would have a Dr. Pepper with my food, or you know, I just slowly eliminated the junk out of my diet, you know. And then I slowly started getting all of the poison shit out of my house. No more Bath and Body candles, Bath and Body Works candles. No more. I mean, just all of the. T it took a while, but all the toxic things. You know, no more fluoride toothpaste. You know, better water. Yes, a bigger water intake. I would like to say, you know, when I was going through chemotherapy, I would eat big bushels of cauliflower. I don't know why. I know why now. But at the time, I was like, I mean, I would sit there at the computer and do my schoolwork and eat a whole head of cauliflower and just love every second of it. I found out later that cauliflower actually kills cancer. And so it was like, my intuition does these things, and I don't understand in the moment what's going on, but it's like I reflect back or learn, and I'm like, "Oh, Oh, that's why I was doing that, you know? But as far as my diet, like I just kind of cut the sodas, no fast food, and just kind of a little bit more cautious about what I was putting in my body.
Getting to the mind slash spiritual aspect of it, and I don't want to give the impression to the viewers who may be plugging in for the withdrawal aspect and how to get clean, what have you. This is kind of a paranormal channel, but I want to get a fuller perspective. We know from a shamanic medicine man, medicine woman perspective that shamans and medicine men and women elders, they think of plant medicine as being like a living entity, that the plants themselves have a consciousness, that they can be a tool for beneficial purposes, or they can take you in another direction. I've spoken to people that were on opioids and other drugs, other pharmaceutical drugs. And they mentioned to me things that I thought were interesting and were tied directly in to the spirit world, because you mentioned a moment ago that conflicted moment when you wanted to, get rid of the bug, right? You had this voice, probably a positively polarized voice associated with the source at some level, saying no.
Yes.
And then you had that
Yes.
other side of you that was like a conflict at work. And I've had Jerry Marzinski on my show, who's worked with so-called schizophrenics, but we know that that's a made-up diagnosis. There's a spiritual component to all this. And he talked about how these intrusive thoughts people get in their heads, they're not our own thoughts. They're externally imposed thoughts by some malign intelligence. What were the thought processes going through you when you would make the mental decision to break away from this? And would start to go through the steps, and then if you would have a setback, because I know that for certain other drugs, there's definitely an narcotic aspect to it. Say if someone's trying to get over pot use, like they're overindulging in too much pot, they will have dreams, very vivid, what I consider stage managed dreams, because in the old days at least, there was this kind of ritualistic aspect to pot use. If you had to separate the seeds, you had to do this, you had to do that, you had to, and then the thing gets passed around and there's anticipation waiting for it to come. And I learned all this by talking to a bunch of different people. And then they go through the process of taking a hit in this dream, right? And then they'll even wake up inhaling. And then there are times when, like, if someone's trying to get off of crystal methadrine or derivatives, Frank, et cetera, some of these archontic entities really want people to be on meth. My mentor, Barbara Barthelic, like, always said it's one of the hardest drugs to get off of, because one gets into a sympathetic resonance with these archontic parasitic entities. It's easier for the people to be taken up as a host. And I've spoken to people that have been on certain pharmaceuticals. They start taking these drugs and then they start seeing entities around the house. Did you start to experience any of that, like intrusive thoughts, start to see more, like almost as if your third eye was activated in a way which allowed you to see into the spirit world, so to speak?
Oh my goodness. Yes. All of that. How interesting.
Very quickly, hold that thought. Same thing happened with people who were addicted to alcohol. They would have dreams of, like, I mean, they'd be clean for weeks and months, and then they'd have a dream of chugging booze, and then they'd wake up, and for a split second, it's like they're hungover or even slightly buzzed for a little while. It's almost like these entities have a way of whatever residual substance is within you, they can amp it up, and then for that moment of time, you wake up, and then when you realize, wow, that's a crazy dream, but there's that nagging feeling of maybe I want some more of this. You know what I mean? But please continue.
Oh man. I mean, that still goes on today. It is spiritual. It's all very spiritual. And I know it's beings, it's energies, beings, whatever you want to call it, that's wanting to siphon what they want, whatever it is. Like I'm very, very aware of that. And yes, so at the time when I was going through this process, I was caretaker for my mother. Okay. She battled with addiction too, but I mean it. interesting her situation because she deals with suicidal pain. I mean, it's really, really bad what she deals with. You know, she fell over a balcony 10 years ago at 60 feet and she's paralyzed. And Big Pharma was, and this is another reason why I do what I do, because they preyed on our vulnerability. I mean, we put our hands into, we put our power into their hands and completely made things so much worse. But where I'm going with that is at the time I was caring for my mom, she was on medication too. She was on opioid medication, to be frank. And there were times, and I did have some setbacks, and there were times when things would get kind of, the withdrawals would get intense, things would get rough, and I would want to, you know, reach for her medication just to alleviate these symptoms. As far as spiritual, I was spiritually, I had so much guidance and protection through this because this was one of the hardest things I had to do. Here I am coming off this trap called Suboxone, but caring for my mother who was still over-medicating, having every pill with her that you could possibly think of, you know, that all this medication that I once, that used to be a part of me. So every day I'm pouring out meds that I used to take for myself and distributing them to her. It was the ultimate test. It was the
It was
ultimate.
like a perfect storm of temptation.
It sure as shit was. It sure as shit was. But let me tell you what I saw in her. You know, she was, I knew there were things going on around me, and I'm more of a feeler. I can't, now I'm able to kind of see and understand in my mind's eye certain things. You know, I'm growing, right? But like, there were a few times that my mom would be so over, I would get like the message, like, you're not even dealing with your mom right now. These beings knew that my mother was my biggest trigger. You know, they knew what I was going through. They knew what I was fighting, and they knew that she was one of the biggest triggers in my life, and they would use her to try to get through to me. Okay. And, you know, and it was so interesting going through this process because sometimes I would get so mad at her and I would catch myself wanting to be like physical, but I knew it wasn't me. I knew this was something on the other end trying to get my life force energy, trying to get me to react and using her as a tool and a weapon against me. And it took me so, because, you know, I would go in there, like she would go in the living room or go in the kitchen and just playing with knives and shit. And it was like, I would look at her and it wasn't even her, right? It wasn't, I mean, I'm talking, we were dealing with like overdoses. This is why I had to move away from the situation that I was, you know, that I was in. I couldn't, this was not sustainable with what I was trying to do. But it was very, very interesting, this all of the experience, because they were really trying to get to me through my mother. And you know, there were, like I said, there were times that I would go off, and for whatever reason, it was always knives. Like I would always, she would always be ordering knives or grabbing knives. And I'm like, I would have to like put them up. But before I understood what was going on, I'd get so mad at her. And it took me some time to realize this, you know, her, one of her last overdoses that she had, and the EMS came and picked her up, and I quieted everything down. And I cleaned up her room, and I was just asked, whatever needs to come through, just let it come through. Like, what is it that I need to know? What am I missing here? What is this? And I got the message that, you know, her soul's not even in her body right now. It's, you're literally dealing with other entities right now. You know, like I even reached out to a couple of our spiritual friends and was like, look, what does this mean? What, like, what, you know, what does this mean? Her soul's not even in it. It helped me understand a lot of things that were going on, but this is how they did attack me. They used, you know, I have this really love hate. I'm not gonna say hate anymore, but I have this relationship with my mom that's very toxic, or it was. It's getting better, right? But it's like they knew that, and they also knew what I was trying to do. They also knew, they're very scared of me stepping into my power. R really, I mean, I they really, really are, and I can feel that sometimes because they push this craving on me whenever I'm starting to feel even more empowered, even more empowered. They'll do things that'll like, I don't know, but this is, but I'm very aware of the spiritual battle, and that's exactly what it is. But they were using my mother as like a weapon because they knew how mad I would get at her and want to just, and I learned to overcome that, right? Because yeah.
One of the ways they got into your mother, and I'm not going to ascribe too much power or omniscience on the part of these negative archontic beings, but whatever circumstances led up to your mom having that horrific fall, and somehow she survived it, extreme chronic pain is one of the means which these archontic entities get into people. Because not only is their physical body impacted, and then the pain that results from that, it makes easier to get in. But that also affects, because of the mental anguish, we're resonators, we emotions, energy in motion, we're pushing out unconsciously even this vibe of anguish and despair and hopelessness and anger and frustration. So then our energy bodies start to get affected, and that makes it even easier. You know, our auric shields weaken. It makes it easier for these entities to come in. And on top of that, the
Right.
patient, in our example, what happened to your mom, she gets prescribed the whole cocktail of these pharmaceuticals. We know the root of the word pharmacy, pharmakia, sorcery, right? Which opens them
Right.
up even further. And what they did, it seems to me, from the outside looking in, is all the trigger points, all the little blatant, obvious, slash subtle, nuanced things that your mom can do or appear to do, could have a triggering effect on you. And I feel the same way about knives. It's like when I wash dishes, they're the first things to be dried and put away. I don't want
Yeah.
them. I don't want them out. You know what I mean? Anything
Right.
sharp, forks, knives, you know, cheese graters, I get them out of the way. I don't want to see them, right?
Right.
Because of the
Right.
potential it could have. I'm almost anal retentive about glasses being left around because they could break and shatter. You know what I mean? So those are trigger points that they get you at. And when you notice that there was this archontic element, and you realize that, wait, that's not my mom that's talking to me. They're trying to get a reaction out of me, right? And so might make me do something that I'll regret. When you realize that that was the process, right? And you start getting this input from your spiritual guides and organic source, that must have been a real relief for you to realize, okay, you know, this is like a problem that needs resolution. So I'm going to go into problem solving mode now, which was actually kind of helpful process.
Yeah. So I was, this is why I was very grateful to meet a lot. I feel like the universe aligned me with all the right people at all the right time. I had a spirit, I don't know if you're familiar with Laura Van Tine, but whenever this would get really intense, she's like, I don't mean to scare you, but your mother's room looks like a scene from Harry Potter. I know. I can't. I can't see it, but you know what? Although I think I was seeing it, right? But like, even there were times I was sitting in there and I could feel them. I could feel them just frolicking all around in there and just, and I don't know what I was thinking. Like, what did I think? I was going to sit there and protect her. They were probably getting my energy too. You know what I mean? I could feel them though. But it was actually pretty liberating. It took a lot. It took some time for me to understand what was really going on there. And I'm very, very grateful for the people that were brought into my life. Like the universe brought all these people that understand things on a bigger level, right? Instead of this 3D, this is what we're dealing with this. Just no, it's so much bigger than that. There's so much more going on here. And it was pretty liberating. But also there's this whole thing of why didn't I know this sooner? Why couldn't I have, you know, why couldn't I have, because then I could have started combating this. Because when I tell you the way that I reacted and responded to my mom, which I mean, most people would, right? I mean, it was pretty crazy. I mean, there were a few times that she was going to burn the damn house down with me in it. So it made me so frustrated and so aggravated. I would get up in the middle of the night and the damn burner on the stove would be on. And it was like, ah, but it just took a long time to understand that this is spiritual warfare. You are dealing with, you are, this is not what you, my mom is vulnerable for this warfare because of the pain and because of the medication, right? But it was very liberating to understand what I was dealing with. I was very grateful for the people that were brought into my life, you know, that could help me through this. I thought, you know, that understanding these things and knowing these things, okay, well, then I've got this. I can still help her. I can still stay here. We can still work through this and navigate it. But I couldn't, you know, I really, I just couldn't. I tried and tried and tried. And I'm really stepping into myself, and I can't step into myself, and work on myself when I'm there with her, caring for her and trying to combat and do all this.
Because that's a different arena entirely, because you're no longer in your own safe place, safe protective bubble, if you will, which could be anywhere else in practice. But when you're
Right.
in that environment, anyone who's had to help on a daily basis someone with a chronic illness, you're in another bubble entirely. It's like when you're there, it's so time consuming and it's so all consuming. As far as your attention level, it's like the outside world ceases to exist. It's
That's right.
like the outside world could go on for weeks at a time. And there are times one is so caught up in the caretaker mode, they hardly even get out of the house. So that whole feeling of isolation and being caught up in the problem, it becomes all consuming.
Yeah, it really can. Yeah, sometimes thinking back, it makes me a little emotional. And like I said, I'm an emotional being, whatever. I don't care. I just did. I am the way that I am. But sometimes looking back at that, I'm just like, wow, how did I navigate that for as long as I did? I mean, it was very, very consuming. But I learned a lot, and I looked at it as, and I treated it as learning and growing and evolving. And if I can, there were times, James, that most of the time she would be in pain, moaning, rocking back and forth. And I'm like, I would just put my headphones in and try to make the best of it, and just, okay, that's not your problem. As much as that sounds mean, like, this is the only way you're going to be able to navigate this, is that's her fight. She has to fight that fight. You fight this fight, you can beat. So I'd put headphones in. I would still be chipper, and it also wouldn't work, because it would almost make her mad at me and resentful towards me, because it's like, here she is fighting every single day and I'm being uplifting and happy just to try to bring that energy, and it just wasn't matching. It wasn't, and it just got so unsustainable, and I kept trying to force this to work and force this to work, and all it did was make things harder between she and I both, because it seemed like I was being a little insensitive, right? It seemed like I was being insensitive, because why wasn't I in there suffering with her? Because I understood that wasn't my fight. And I understood that I was supposed to be here for her. And I really thought I could help herself. And it was just not, I hate to say unsuccessful, because it was like, I was successful in the fact that I grew a lot, those 2 years. And I mean, we were in and out of the hospital every other day. I mean, I look at old pictures and videos that when I first started putting myself out there, and I'm like, wow, I'm actually pretty damn proud of myself for getting myself out of this situation that I was in, and doing it as successfully as I did without being, I mean, she had every medication you could think of. If I wanted to drown myself, I could have, and I didn't. I used this as a way to give me inspiration to do the exact opposite of that,
This is really eye-opening, in so many ways. I mean, I had a question, but what you've been saying is just so hardcore in many ways that I kind of blanked out on it. How were you able to detach from that situation? Were you able to find a community care nurse or a caretaker, or how did that process play itself out?
So I had went to a conference and had made the decision that I was going to start putting things in place so that I could slowly kind of take myself away from the equation. And I kind of mentioned to her, like, listen, we need to start putting some things in place to where somebody can step in. Maybe I can still live here, but I want to work. I could not work and care for her. I tried and I couldn't do it. I just, call me a sissy, but I couldn't do it. It was just too much. And so when I started to tell her this, like, we need to start putting people in place so I can kind of start focusing on my own life. Well, and keep in mind that this is spiritual, what we're dealing with here, right? And so I was kind of forced to make this jump, because, one day there was a cop that comes and knocks at my door after I had told my mother, listen, we need to start putting people in place. This was around September of last year. August or September. And I'm like, we kind of need to start putting people in place. I want to start moving on to the next chapter of my life, blah, blah, blah. Next thing I know, a couple of days later, a cop comes and knocks at my door. And he is there to do a well check on my mother. And I'm so ticked off because I know that this stemmed from her, the nurse. You know, again, this is a woman that is literally just dealing with so much, you know, so it's like I have to be forgiving. But like he came to do a well check on her, and this is not the first time that these adult protective services, all these people, right? And so he was like, "Is Michelle?" He asked to speak to my mom. I step away. I'm like, I'm gonna go check them out because I'm so frustrated that whatever that comes out of my mouth is not going to be pleasant. So I leave. I'm like, she's inside. So I walk away. And then as I'm walking back, the cop's driving by and he was like, you didn't even stick around. I said, listen, I'm not trying to be disrespectful at all. I was like, but you know, I know exactly what this is about. And he's like, yeah. He's like, we've been out here before. And he was like, if there's anything you ever need, you just let us know. So basically, I'm like, okay, now your freedom's on the line because I've already dealt with things with my mother. You know what I mean? With just adult protective, just some toxic things with my mom. And when that man came and knocked at my door, and when, you know, all these other, you know, when these people started coming in, I'm like, okay, I don't have a choice now. I don't, you know, I've got to get out. And that may not be what you asked me, but it was only a couple months later that I was out of there because I didn't
That's
really
if that
have.
was the catalyst that it needed to happen. And what people don't realize, and I don't want to go too far on a tangent in this, but sometimes if you zoom out, if you look at the grand cosmic scheme of things, this overarching spiritual guidance of the divine God, if you will, I know that's triggering that word for some people, but sometimes God, guidance of the divine, will actually use evil assets, bad things, in order to affect meaningful positive change down the line. Things may happen, you're saying, WTF, why is this happening now? Why are these people coming in? Because, see, when I hear wellness checks, right, I'm thinking of, oh, we heard your son is suicidal, bang, bang, they kill him, which they do all the time in America. It's part of that Israeli militarized police training of theirs, right? Where it's supposed to be a wellness check, but then everything, because these cops are all on drugs themselves, a lot of them, not all of them, and a lot of them fit a certain psych profile, and they've been briefed that if this becomes an issue, just take out the source of the threat. Well, I thought it was a wellness check. Now it was a source of a threat now, because they're
Right.
suicidal. They're holding like a butter knife or something, right? See, so I mean that's triggering for me. I hate to say it, but when you mention wellness check and cops show up, now. On what basis did they show up? Was it just like a scheduled thing, or do they just rock up all of a sudden? I mean,
So, and let me just say, and I'm not proud of this, but I've actually been to jail because of something, you know, with my mother. And I understand, like, from a higher perspective, that this is just all playing itself out. It's just this karmic thing between she and I, you know, it's all just kind of playing itself out. But when they come and knock at the door like that, I'm literally hearing by my guides, like, you got to go. You like quit, quit. You have to go. Whatever that looks like, you gotta go. And I'm like, shit. But I think what had happened was she had a conversation with my aunt. She likes to play victim, you know, and I think she had had a conversation. And then that kind of, I mean, that's what I was getting intuitively. I knew it stemmed from a conversation that she had with somebody. And they love to try to point the finger. There were so many times that they were trying to make it look like I wasn't taking care of her. Because I would like go and drop her off at the hospital and I wouldn't stay with her because I needed that time to kind of focus on me, you know. But there were times that I mean, in 1 week, she had like three overdoses in 1 week. And like the last time she had one, like I had mentioned to you, I was in her room trying to understand what was going on. And they're calling me to come pick her up after she was unresponsive in her room. They're calling me to come pick her up like within a matter of a couple of hours. I don't do it. I don't do it because I'm like, she obviously needs to be in your care right now. But it just became very weird and very spiritual and just in an energy that I could not stay in. And it was not, Although I will say there were a handful of people that were like, we've got your back. We're here for you. We've been here every time that EMS has been called. We've been here every time, you know, that you, it was real just like more EMS, right? We would call for EMS because she'd be in so much pain she couldn't move. And then all this other stuff would unravel. So I don't know if that answers your question.
All it does, it also, it brings back a lot of memories, and in discussions I've had with other people dealing with chronically ill people and people that were, going to pass away at some point, people that were, in the dying process, right? Just how often they've got to call the ambulances or the EM, EMTs over, and how many times the ambulance got to take them to the hospital because it looks like, okay, this time they're going to pass away, and then that roller coaster, unless someone has gone through something like that. Right.
So
Please.
what's interesting, James, and I just kind of want to chime on this because you had mentioned passing away. I'm so sorry if I interrupted you, but I don't want this to kind of, okay, cool. So I had mentioned she had like multiple overdoses in 1 week, and that very last one, I was about to be going to a conference, the Journey to Truth conference. And I think it was 2024, anyways, not this year, but the year before. And I remember this is when I reached out to some mutual spiritual friends, and I was like, I'm getting this message that her soul's not even in her body. What is that about? Every single one of them said her soul is trying to make a decision right now. It doesn't know if it wants to stay or if it wants to go. And they're like, I would not be surprised if while you are away, she transitions on and passes on. And what was so interesting was like, okay, so I was going to this conference, like preparing myself for this to happen, right? I didn't know what was going to happen. But when I returned, it was like, it was almost, I guess she decided to stay because she was like, you know, driving and doing all these things. And somebody had mentioned sometimes the soul does that, right? Like it'll be ready to check out and then it'll come back and like start living life like better than ever, but then end up checking out within a couple of months. So I just kind of wanted to share that. I thought that was, and she's still trucking along, just so we're all clear.
Wow, this has been a real eye opener. Thank you so much for sharing. Could you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you if you feel so inclined? If not, they can reach you through me. Whatever the case may be.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I have a Facebook page, which is, you know, really devoted to like, it's called Unveiling Addiction. Anybody kind of, you know, battling the Suboxone or, you know, just anything for that matter. So that's my Facebook page. You can also get me on my Facebook page with my name, Chasity Munoz. I'm on TikTok as well with my name, Chasity Munoz. I have a YouTube channel that I'm trying to get going again, which is called Unveiling Addiction. And then I'm also on Instagram, Chassie32.
Thank you for that. And for our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.